You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Head on over to rockauto.com and let them know that Locked On sent you. And so over the weekend, the players all kind of had a coordinated posting blitz. And by the players, I mean the stars from every team, everybody from Patrick Mahomes to J.J. Watt, NFLPA president J.C. Treader, among Vikings, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Anthony Harris, Kirk Cousins, all kind of had a coordinated posting blitz over the course of Sunday, asking the NFL to take their COVID preparations more seriously, get more work done, and essentially asking them to get their act together so that we can have safe football in the fall. And I haven't talked too much about this just because I'm kind of trying to wait until more information comes out, and I don't want to belabor it every day, but this seems like a good enough excuse to kind of catch up since last time we talked about COVID and how it was going to affect the season. I think the last time we talked, there were two cut preseason games, and I was upset about it, of course, because I love the preseason and I'm going to miss it, but I also understand that you kind of have to do what is more safe for your players. And so in a statement, J.C. Treader, who is, again, the NFLPA president, essentially president of the union, brought up a couple of grievances that I want to describe to you, because in the like posting blitz of a lot of the players' messages, it was really vague. It was asking them to get their act together. It was, we don't want to play. We don't want to, put ourselves at risk. But it was hashtag we want to play. The we want to play thing was kind of the main crux, is we want to play football. We want to do it safely and we need your help to do so. But that's kind of vague. It's, what help do you need? What are you actually asking for? And you kind of have to go into the actual statements and into the actual writings to actually find out what that is. So I have done that for you, and I can tell you exactly what the players are asking for here so that you can decide for yourself if you think the players are just whining and they should shut up and play, or if you think that they actually have a legitimate grievance here. Personally, I fall in the latter, but I'll let you make your own choices about that. So one of the big themes that the players have been kind of messaging is to listen to your own medical experts that you hired. But again, they didn't really say what about to listen. So what that actually is about is the ramp up process. So this doesn't actually have a lot to do with the actual disease of COVID. It has to do more with the unprecedented and weird scheduling that has happened and the increased risk of injury that goes along with it. Essentially, they haven't had the same mini camp and OTAs and the same kind of spring ramp up program that they usually have, where they have a lot of conditioning and a lot of kind of getting back in shape. And players are expected to stay in shape over the course of the offseason, but there's a big difference between offseason shape and we're just kind of keeping our conditioning up to you're practicing every day and you're ready to kind of handle training camp and handle an actual NFL workload. There's a little bit of ramp up that has to go in with that. And that's kind of the point of like mini camp and OTAs and the first kind of few practices of training camp. But we didn't really have all of those things. And so it's going to take a little bit more for guys to get their bodies ready to take the punishment that football takes. And if you don't, you risk like a ton of injuries. And so this could be a really, really unprecedented and ugly, ugly injury season if they don't kind of extend the ramp up process. And what they're asking is pretty intense. They want a 48-day ramp up process. So a 48-day training camp, which is longer than what training camp usually encompasses. Now, that would be completely possible without a preseason, and canceling the preseason games goes along with that. So the players basically want that plan. They say, cancel the preseason games. We're not ready to go to game speed yet. And preseason games are pretty dangerous anyways, because we're all, you know, kind of cross-contaminating with our opponents and all that. So let's cancel that. Let's get a ramp-up period. Let's just get ready for week one. And they're not asking for this on like their own investigations of the thing. This is what the expert panel that the NFL hired at the behest of the players' union, but also because like, yeah, just hire some medical experts to help you figure out how to deal with the pandemic and do sports. That panel of experts has recommended a 48-day ramp-up period and no preseason games. So they've already canceled two, but they don't want to cancel the other two. And essentially the conversation goes like this. Now, this is J.C. Treader's telling of the situation. So basically what he says is we asked them to give us a medical reason for preseason games, because there might be something to be said for, well, you might want to go once at like half game speed, like a preseason game would be, so that week one isn't your first like full on game action. That might be actually better for like injury prevention and something. It doesn't sound like the medical experts have corroborated that, but I could see at least that being a theory. But the NFL didn't say that. They said they had no, or at least J.C. Treader said they had no medical reason to have a preseason game. That doesn't affect the standings. What they want is to have the preseason game for roster evaluation, that's a football reason, and for kind of testing out some of the weirder stuff that's going to happen in the season, like playing with no fans and some of the other differences that are going to happen in 2020, and they want to test those out. And so what that reads to me is that we are willing to put you at greater risk than you already were at, and that the NFL would rather take that risk at their players than risk a team cutting the wrong player or something kind of working awkwardly with like the broadcast and being kind of embarrassed. That is, I guess, the logic that it sounds like the NFL has put forth, that we want the football decisions to supersede the safety decisions, and I think that's what the players are mad about. I reiterate, they want to play. The players want to play. The coaches want to play. The NFL wants to play. The fans want them to play. Everyone wants football. But I think the way to go about it needs to be smart. And like, I'll miss the preseason a lot, but that's a pretty small price to pay to make sure that there's less chance of transmission and less chance of injury. Football is a really, really dangerous sport, and the chance of injury is only going to be increased by the awkward training camp schedule. And there's not a lot we can do about that. But what we can do is at least adapt the training camp schedule to be maybe a little less fun for fans, but at least, lower injury. And even if you wanted to say like, well, you know, the players knew what they signed up for, and I don't care if they get injured, you're a sociopath. But if you wanted to say that, I'd still argue that you probably want fewer injuries in the regular season and a sacrifice of the preseason for the sake of healthier regular season ball is probably something that you're all gonna stand behind. I think everybody should stand behind that. The other thing about injury and the like generally risky nature of the NFL is kind of difficult to parse, because you can kind of say, oh, well, like they sign up for dangerous stuff all the time. Stuff that is just, I mean, CTE, just as lethal as COVID-19, maybe even more so. I mean, it's a degenerative, brain-damaging sport. This is not something, like, they already assume some risk. Why are they bothered when this other risky thing comes in? And for one, adding more risk is always going to be difficult. It's already pretty risky. Yeah, they don't want it to be any more risky. But the other thing is, you can't give your wife a broken leg when you have a broken leg. Like, broken legs aren't contagious, right? And so unless they implement some kind of bubble thing, like what the NBA is doing, and even that is proving to have its own little kinks and wrinkles, they definitely can't have, NBA, like the NBA has all the courts laid out in Orlando and they're all going to play in the same place. The NFL can't really do that because it just takes up too much space as a sport. You need way bigger fields. There's not really a place that can like accommodate that without completely like building new football fields out in the middle of nowhere or something like that. But that would be like logistically pretty impossible to do that. So basically you have to have these guys travel around the country and risk transmitting COVID-19 to their loved ones, to their other players. If they catch it from their loved ones, they can quarantine as much as possible. But getting sick is an inevitability. And it is a little bit disconcerting that the NFL hasn't figured out really what they're going to do. There is also the conflict of the non-football injury list, which is basically what the NFL is planning to use in the event that somebody does come down with COVID-19 in the middle of the season. Let's say you're a player, you get sick, and you have to quarantine now. They're making a quarantine for 3 weeks. And during that time, you're put on the non-football injury list, which would be a meaningless designation if it weren't for the pay. If you're on the non-football injury list, you don't get your game checks for those weeks. It was designed for, say, you know, you break your ankle playing a pickup game of basketball or on an ATV accident or something. Since the NFL wasn't responsible for that, they're not going to pay you for, they're not going to like workers comp you like they would for a football injury that happens on the field. And so putting COVID-19 in that category is not going over very well, because, I mean, if it weren't for the need to play football and the mandate to show up, and yes, per the CBA, they can mandate the players to show up at the threat of removing their pay or docking them or fining them if they don't. That kind of sounds like if you catch COVID-19 because you were forced to show up, that kind of sounds like a football injury, and it kind of sounds like something the NFL should comp. And they're not budging on all of that, and there's a lot of arguing left to be had here. But the players are making their voices heard. And I mean, honestly, last time they did something really unified and coordinated like this was earlier in the summer with the George Floyd protests and the police brutality protests. And they actually did get a pretty good statement out of Roger Goodell that he said word for word exactly what they asked him to. So there is some precedent for this working out. The Vikings are scheduled to start camp. The rookies are going to report on Thursday. And next week, the rest of the players are going to report. So there is a lot of stuff that needs to be answered, and it needs to be answered fast. And it kind of sounds like the NFL let itself fall way behind on all of this, because back in like May, they kind of thought that the whole problem was going to go away, and they let themselves fall behind and spent more of their energy protecting the broadcast deals and protecting their bottom line than actually figuring out how they were going to be able to do this safely. That's a lot more speculation on my end, that last part. So don't take that as fact. That's just kind of me looking around and seeing, you know, they spent a lot of time figuring out how we're going to get fans and how we're going to recoup ads by putting recoup ad revenue by putting tarps in the first row and all that. And it kind of seems like they didn't figure out, like, okay, what do we do if somebody gets the disease? What if somebody gets like their whole, this is a question I have. What if somebody like a Von Miller catches it? And I'm pretty sure he did catch it, and he has asthma. So it could actually do like irreparable harm to his body. And if somebody like that who has COVID do irreparable harm to their body, which it can happen to a completely healthy person too, if that happens and they can never play football again, what's the legal ramifications of that, right? Like, I don't think that's covered in the CBA, and I don't think that's covered in any agreement between the NFL and NFLPA so far. So you could get into really murky legal territory there. And that is going to be something that I really don't want to have to pay attention to. I don't really see a way from where we are right now. I don't really see a way that this doesn't get really, really ugly. And I guess I hope I'm wrong about that. But I'm going to switch gears here now and talk about a couple of players, do a little bit more story time for the rest of the show. Since training camp is coming up, we're going to start covering it next week. So we've got to get the rest of the stories out of the way. So that's going to be most of this week is going to be some story time stuff and a few training camp preview things. But we can't actually hear a lot coming out of training camp anyways, because it's super limited media access. So we might have to do a little bit more of this kind of off-season-y theory crafting content. We'll play it by ear as we go. But before we get into all of that, I want to talk to you about rockauto.com. Rock Auto is a car parts aggregation website, which basically means they have an awesome selection of stuff that you need when your car breaks. Anything that you would get at like an auto parts store, you can get at Rock Auto, probably for a pretty good discount because they have to compete with those established brick and mortar stores. The good thing though is if your car is stuck in your garage because you need a new tire or you need a new battery or something, Rock Auto can deliver it right to your door. And their selection is insane. You just enter your make, your model, and your year, and they're probably going to have a few options for whatever the part is that you need. So head on over to rockauto.com, and when you check out, it would be just great if you told them that Locked On sent you. All right, before we get into the first story, one more quick update about the COVID stuff. Today, on Monday, the day that this episode airs, Eric Sugarman will be addressing the media about all that. And if he says anything interesting about COVID and the Vikings' specific plans, I'll talk about it on tomorrow's show. Okay, so in Hutton, Texas, around, I want to call it like 2012, 2013, there was this dynamic dual threat quarterback. There's a ton of dynamic dual threat quarterbacks in high school football in Texas. And unfortunately, some of them are going to slip through the cracks and not necessarily get the recruiting buzz that other guys get. Davion Davis was one of those guys. He did not get a lot of fanfare coming out of college, and he ended up at FCS Sam Houston, Division I AA. Another big issue is that they didn't really think he could play quarterback. They wanted him to move to slot receiver and kind of be a dynamic, you know, weapon, but not necessarily a passer. And that's something that you kind of get with a lot of those dual threat runaround type guys. It's not going to work out in college, and we really can only have you be a receiver. So he plays the slot. He actually has a pretty good freshman year there at Sam Houston State. He ends up being kind of explosive, actually. So they had a couple of senior wide receivers that were really speedy and stretched the field and opened up all this room underneath, and Davion Davis could basically just go to work. So after those guys graduate, he gets to be the kind of premier guy, and they've left off the perimeter. So Sam Houston actually moves Davion Davis out to the perimeter, and he actually eats there as well. And he turns into this kind of really Southland Conference, you know, FCS, but he turns into this real fixture for the Sam Houston State Bearcats. And he had a pretty good career there at Sam Houston State. His senior year is probably the most noteworthy, though, because, for one, it starts out one of the first games in his senior year in September there of 2018. He does the thing that he probably is most known for, and I'll link it in the show notes. He makes this absolutely insane one-handed grab. And that gets him a little bit of attention, and I think that's the kind of moment you need when you're at, AA, FCS, Sam Houston State kind of school. When you're a small schooler like that, you kind of have to have a moment, I think, to stand out from the crowd and get yourself on somebody's radar. And so he makes this absolutely insane one-handed catch. He says it was kind of a wacky formation, and it got him a one-on-one, and the ball is thrown. He's covered pretty well, and the ball is thrown kind of over their heads in a, like, you know, miss where if your guy can't get it, nobody can get it kind of miss. And he goes up and he just, like, stretches out. It looks a lot like the OBJ catch, you know, the one I'm talking about, and he just miraculously, it's this unbelievable catch. Again, yeah, go watch it. I'll link it in the show notes, but it gets him a little bit of buzz. But unfortunately, he doesn't actually get to finish out his senior year. He suffers a leg injury late in the year, and instead of aggravating it to play the last few games out at Sam Houston State, he's got a future to think of, and there is this kind of decision point with that kind of thing. Do I do the loyal thing? You know, maybe I won't even play football again. Is that going to be really it for me? Do I come back and, you know, try to play through it? And it's hard to know with the way that college teams can kind of keep this stuff close to the vest. So it's hard to know if he even was able to, but he decides, nope, I'm going to keep things healthy. His coaches kind of help him decide too. His coaches are ultimately have a lot to say about this. So they all decide, no, we're going to shut him down. It's okay. Keep your future on lock. And, thanks for everything. So his career with Sam Houston State kind of ends with an unfortunate whimper. But he ended up with 40 touchdowns over that time, which is the most in Southland Conference history. He was an All-American. He was a Southland Conference Offensive Player of the Year in 2017. He has a lot of accolades, and his time there is probably going to be remembered pretty fondly for a long time. I think it'll be a while before a receiver like Davion Davis comes through Sam Houston State again. So that brings him to the NFL, and he doesn't get drafted out of a small school like that, but he does get a shot as an undrafted free agent in the 2019 class, and he gets to go to Vikings camp. And now I've talked a lot about rookie minicamp, because usually I'm talking about guys who were rookie tryouts who then kicked someone else off the team and made it. But for undrafted free agents, they're kind of vulnerable at that minicamp, and I've never really talked about it from their perspective. If you've missed those episodes, basically there is a weekend before most seasons, not this one because it was weird because of COVID, but most seasons there is a kind of a weekend where it's like a rookie orientation and they do a lot of drills. The problem is you only have like 20, 25 players, right, with your undrafted free agents and your draft class. So you have to bring in a lot of other undrafted guys that didn't catch on with the team to kind of fill out the drills. You can't like successfully do a drill unless you have a rotation of 6-7 guys that can kind of go through. And so you have to fill them all out and basically be camp arms or, you know, guys to just be handoff arms or whatever. And they just come in and they get paid for their time. But there's nothing stopping a coach. If you look better in the drill than a guy that was signed as an undrafted free agent, there's nothing stopping a coach from cutting that guy and signing you. So it becomes a kind of a tryout thing. For an undrafted free agent who has signed, like Davion Davis, he has to outplay all those guys. And it was the last day of minicamp when he really felt like he kind of caught on. And he made a couple of really good catches from Kyle Sloter passes and, you know, a couple of really good plays. And he felt like, all right, I belong here and I'm going to try to make it through camp. But camp doesn't go, like, great for him. Of course, he doesn't make the team, and he ends up bouncing onto the practice squad. But after a couple of weeks, if you remember all the kind of lower roster turmoil of the 2019 season, Nate Meadors was there while they were waiting for Mackenzie Alexander to get healthy and Mike Hughes to get healthy. Mike Hughes got healthy, so they cut Nate Meadors. And then they, at the same time, Chad Beebe got hurt, so they needed to roster another wide receiver. And Davion Davis actually spends a couple of games on the active 53-man roster, weeks 4 and 5. Eventually, they get Laquan Treadwell back, so they cut Davis for him, and then he spends the rest of the season on the practice squad, except for another similar stint in November. And then, unfortunately, basically all the headlines about Davion Davis, if you Google Davion Davis right now, you're going to find that in December, he got in a little bit of trouble. He got a DWI, he was going too fast, got pulled over for speeding, the cops smelled alcohol, and he ended up getting a DWI. He did still sign a futures contract coming back, but there might be a little bit of doghouse here. And now, for Davis, there's quite a lot to overcome. He went from being kind of a superstar in his own level, but when he's now trying to jump up to the next one, to the NFL level from small school college football, there's quite a bit to overcome. So I would look at Davion Davis as a guy with a lot to prove, and if I've got to prove it is any bit of a motivator, he's gonna have it, and so it'll be interesting to see if he can put anything together and try to make the team. Coming up next, we're gonna talk about an actual draft pick of the Vikings, a new rookie. We're gonna get to know him, so stick around. So in Detroit, there is this world of youth 7-on-7 football that's actually pretty competitive, and if you grow up in the Michigan area, chances are you know about it, and it might even be where you cut your chops. And that is true of Brian Colt, Mississippi State safety that the Vikings selected in the 7th round. He was like hyper-athletic kid. He would play basketball in the winter and then baseball in the spring and summer and then football in the fall, and he would play sports year-round. But football was where he was particularly talented, and that's where he got all of his buzz. So as a like hyper-athletic player and mostly recruited as a wide receiver, he was the top college recruit in Michigan in his recruiting year, number one. So he was courted by everybody, but he chose hometown Michigan. Now, the transition between high school and college can be really tough, and especially if you don't quite have your head on straight, you know, if you're an 18-year-old kid, you don't take it seriously enough because you are always just so much more athletic, it can be hard to kind of adjust to the attitude you have to adjust or to succeed in college football. So his freshman year doesn't really work out. He plays mostly special teams, he gets like 3 games where he actually gets snaps on offense, and Jim Harbaugh cuts him. And it's actually kind of mysterious, the circumstances under which he is cut, because not playing a lot in your freshman year because you're not transitioning right is something that like a lot of players go through. But getting released from the team entirely is a different thing altogether. And we probably will never know what happened. College teams have absolutely no reason that they have to say it. Nobody will ever have to say it out loud. So we just kind of have to suffice it to say he didn't have his head on straight. And that's kind of what he says when he's asked about it. He's like, I was hanging with the wrong people and I wasn't in the right mindset. So he had to figure out what to do next. He could have gone to another school, but what he ends up taking, he gets an email from East Mississippi Community College, who you might know from Last Chance U and from a couple of the other stories that we've told on this series. They say, we want you to come in and play for us. He says, well, that's a long way from home, but yeah, I'll do it. This seems like a good opportunity for me to get kind of my head on straight, for me to kind of recover from this and have a place to sort of rebuild my career from this really low moment. And there he meets up with a guy named Chauncey Rivers, who had a very similar exit from the Georgia Bulldogs. He had a couple of marijuana charges, he gets kicked off the team, and he has to go through JUCO as well. So they're both like a couple of college sophomores stuck on campus because neither of them have a car. They play a bunch of video games. They get really close. They become like best friends. And it's tough for Brian Cole to play at East Mississippi because it's not the level of grandeur he's used to. I mean, he was a superstar in high school and he was the number one guy with all this hype coming into Michigan. And now he's in a place where there's like not quite all of that buzz, right? There's not the hype. There's not the attention. So he says it's like kind of hard for him to adjust to that. It's going to be a tough time. He's far from home. And you know, they go hard on you at East Mississippi Community College. And it's tough for him to get through, but he perseveres. And he really, goes back when he's asked about it later. He really appreciates that adversity. So after his year at Eastern Mississippi, it comes time to start to make the big decision. All right, where are you actually going to go to college? And now he's recruited by a bunch of other people. They all remember his talent. They realize that whatever happened is probably a one-off thing, and they are recruiting him again. He ends up going to Mississippi State, right next to there. And a few days later, Chauncey Rivers commits there as well. So Brian Cole, he was a wide receiver at Michigan and that hadn't worked out. They actually tried to move him to safety in a couple of his last practices there, but they must not have liked it enough. But he actually played on defense at East Mississippi. So that was a really nice place for him to kind of get acclimated to the position in a relatively low pressure environment, right? The level of competition isn't going to push you quite as hard as like D1 does. So he could kind of learn the position and get a year of experience under his belt without getting crushed too bad for being new at it. So for academic reasons, he actually redshirts a year at Mississippi State as well. So another year of practice in a fairly low pressure situation, except for the pressure to get your grades up. But the problem is that only leaves him 2 years of college eligibility left to actually play for Mississippi State. So what they do is they put him at what they call the star position. In the Vikings defense, this would translate to being like the nickel corner. This is what Mackenzie Alexander and Mike Hughes did. Kind of like what Jayron Kearse did there too, that kind of hybrid between a safety and a linebacker and a nickel cornerback. And he plays that position. And things actually go pretty well until 4 games in, he tears his pec and he doesn't play another snap that whole season. So he only has 1 year of eligibility left when he heads into the 2019 season for Mississippi State, and he has a lot to prove, right? Things flamed out in Michigan, he's only done well against community college competition, and he hasn't really gotten a chance to like get on the field for Mississippi State. And boy, prove it he does. He has a great senior season, you're probably familiar with it, and that's what ends up getting him drafted to the Minnesota Vikings. He just barely sneaks in there in the 7th round, but drafted he is. And now he comes in looking to make it as a safety, maybe as a nickel, maybe as kind of a Jayron Kearse replacement, but somewhere in that defensive backfield looking to find his way onto the roster. For a 7th round pick, that's far from a guarantee, but for the safeties on the Vikings, there's not all of that much competition. After Smith and Anthony Harris, you have Josh Metellus, and in terms of listed safeties, that's it. You kind of have Harrison Hand, and there's another guy that might actually kind of move to safety, and they might move them there, but right now they're not even listed there, and even if they are, then you're competing against guys that are playing a different position than what they're used to, which should give you a leg up. So Brian Cole might be there, and really a huge reason why he fell as far as he did was because his college career was marred by so many other extenuating things, by whatever happened in Michigan, and by being a community college, and then having to take an academic redshirt year. So he's kind of a wild card, and it's really difficult to know exactly what we're gonna get out of Brian Cole. But either way, he's been through so much adversity to get to this point. I'm really excited to see kind of what sort of play that spits out. So that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow with any updates on how training camp is going to work and the structure of it and whatever we know. Otherwise, we'll talk about a whole bunch of fun stories. So in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.